Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
HQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
Good evening and welcome once again to Madame Perry's Salon, the podcast with more followers and more celebrities than the inauguration. I am your host and cruise director, Madame Perry. You can call me Jennifer Perry, NJP. I'm just glad you're here. And I'm also glad that you've been listening, subscribing. You've been subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast FM, Last FM, Blog Talk Radio, and sharing with your friends. And I thank you so very much because the more time, more people subscribe and download, that just keeps me going to bring you more fantastic guests like I've had, like I've got coming up, and like I've got tonight. Just to give you a little heads up things to come, you know, very soon, we're still fiddling on the dates, but Bootsy Collins from Parliament Funkadelic will be here soon, as well as Carrie Villazara, author in Boston, Massachusetts, with new book Caitlin's Moorings. And just, Kenneth Kane. Kenneth Kane, a sci-fi and horror writer, has new stuff coming out. And we're going to have a show about Kenneth's new books, as well as there are three women introduced to my audience and have a special show just for them in September. So we'll have Kenneth later this month and then this other show in September, and we'll be giving you all the information on that. And so excited. By the way, saying hello to my longtime listeners that I love, Crystal and Benny and Ray D'Africo, thanks for doing your great work in Georgia. Especially since I know you've been doing a lot of work for Stacey Abrams, who may be our next governor in Georgia. Dana and Mimi, everybody out there, John Strangeway, thank you so very much for listening. By the way, get this out of the way now because I don't have a sponsor in mind, but I will tell you this. Some of you know that I am an entertainment publicist, and I'm going to be in Amsterdam for about a week and a half in the middle of September. If you would like for me to personally deliver your CDs or your books to any bookstores in Amsterdam during that time, just contact me through Lone Wolf Communications or just me, Jennifer Maudette Perry or Madame Perry Salon on Facebook or Twitter or Lone Wolf Communications on the internet, and I will be happy to set up way to get your books out there because they've got a big demand for English language. Relation speaks English. I was there last year and visited several bookstores as well as travelers. So, got that going on. Now, tonight, I am so excited. This woman has been here, my guest tonight has been here as part of an anthology with Twice, but tonight she is my special guest. I'm so excited. She is a teacher of science fiction at the City University of New York. She's written more books than I can remember to count, and I could go on, but right now, because she is an award winner, but right now, I just want to go ahead and bring her in so we can start. She is the magnificent, I called her the feminist science fiction superheroine. She's a scholar and writer, Marlene Barr. Marlene, welcome once again to Madame Perry Salon.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm really happy to be a feminist science fiction heroine with you.
Thank you. I am just thrilled. And your new book is called, let me get the whole name correct, When Trump Changed, the Feminist Science Fiction Justice League Quashed the Orange.
I'll do it in my Trump Queens.
I'll
do it in my Trump Queens accent because I'm from Forest Hills, Queens, which is about a stone's throw of where Trump grew up in Jamaica States, and what comes out of my mouth is not what he says, but I speak with the same accent that he does, like China and Russia. And that's where the comparison ends. But the title is When Trump Changed, the Feminist Science Fiction Justice League Quashes the Orange Outrage Pussy Grabber, and it's published by BQ Press. And in the comments on Amazon, the person who just won the Science Fiction Research Association Pilgrim Award for Lifetime Achievement in Science Fiction Criticism, he said that he only read some of the book, so he can't comment upon it fully, but he said he is sure that no Trump book title that has been written or ever will be written will have a better title than this one.
Oh, all right. Magnificent, you know. And I haven't seen all the titles either, but I cannot imagine anything doing your title. I don't know where to begin. Where did you come up with the title?
Well, I came up with the title. There's a famous feminist science fiction writer, Joanna Russ, and I loved her immensely. She's no longer with us. But one of the best science fiction stories is called When It Changed. And it's about a feminist planet called Wiloway, and all the people on it are women. And when men come, that is when it changed. And I first called the book The Feminist Science Fiction Justice League Quashes the Orange Outrage Pussy Grabber, and that was the main title. And the publisher said that I cannot have that as a main title, and I have to have a more subdued main title, and I couldn't have that. So I was thinking and thinking, and I said, what am I going to come up with a title? And I was thinking of When It Changed and how much I love that story. And I said, When Trump Changed. And that became the title. And When Trump Changed, remember when he first came upon us, everyone was saying that he's going to change, that he'll become presidential. Well, he never changed. He just got worse. So I thought the title, When Trump Changed, it alludes to Joanna Russ's feminist science fiction story, and it's provocative because he's never going to change. And we all know that now. Nobody talks about him changing anymore.
No, they don't. And that is why I don't want to know. I don't want to hear people say, what did you think that? Why are you sure? Because I just saw a little while ago that there is a consumer electronics business in South Carolina that's about to shut down. Not for sure how long. Could be 3 months, 6 months, or longer because of the tariffs on China. This is news that just came out today.
And he's hurting the people who elected him. The farmers are going to get hurt. And every day it gets worse and worse. And it defies credulity. And I think science fiction is the only genre that can handle him. And there's not a lot. I thought that people would start writing Trump fiction. There's only like one Trump novel. And my book is the only single-authored Trump short story anthology, because I guess you have to be very mad to write 32 separate scenario stories. And BQ Press, my publisher, they're the nexus of Trump, of anti-Trump fiction. And with my scholar hat, I coined the term Trump punk to describe this science fiction about Trump.
That is brilliant.
So I wrote a scholarly. I have two hats. I'm a scholar, and I guess I'm a fiction writer. And scholars are not humorous. But one evening, I'm writing a Trump punk scholarly article, which is in a scholarly online journal called Deletion, and I'm going, what is this? Because scholars characterize things. And I said, okay, Trump punk. And then the next day, I get up and I write Trump punk, and I guess like a medical doctor can diagnose themselves, so as a scholar doctor, I can diagnose what I'm writing. It's Trump punk.
Trump punk. Yeah, that's how perfect. How, yeah, it works. And another thing, I was watching a video of yours where you were talking about, I guess, linguistics was the gist of it, and about how the speech of, as you were saying, you know, you said you can talk in the same accent or talk or speech pattern that Trump's is because you've grown up so, where you live is so close to where you grew up. But you said his was not the, and please correct me and forgive me if I get this wrong, that even though it's the same type, it's not the masculine, it's the feminine, that he speaks more like the Real Housewives of New York.
Yes, I wrote that probably in 2016 because I love the Real Housewives of New York, and I've seen some of them around New York. I've talked to Ramona and I've talked to the Countess, and they have drama and they're fighting with each other. And when Trump fights with, like, Rosie O'Donnell and celebrities, he's acting in a feminized way, like the real reality show, The Real Housewives of New York. He's not acting like a male leader. And the person who invented The Real Housewives of New York, Andy Cohen, he subsequently said that he thinks that Trump sounds like The Real Housewives of New York, but I said it before he did.
And so, and then will you say to us, oh, my gosh. Yeah, and do you think, does there seem to be just a wee bit more than just a speech, but that, or is it because, and I don't want to denigrate my own sex, but it seems that he's got that kind of a spoiled behavior about him.
Yes, like no professional person acts the way he does. Like one of the courses I teach freshman English, and of course I care about words. And when he first used the word pussy, I nearly lost it. And I went into class, and I talked about it, and I said pussy in freshman English. And I teach all kinds of New York kids, and these are sophisticated kids. And when I said pussy, they nearly croaked. They said, our teacher is saying pussy. They couldn't get over it. And the president of the United States, you know, they couldn't stand that their freshman English teacher is saying pussy because it seemed unbelievable. But the president of the United States says that he grabs pussy? Who talks this way? We're used to it now, but I was appalled at that word. And that's why it got in my title. Who would use this word? Who uses that? Excuse me, I'm screaming, but I just can't get over it.
Please, honey, you've been here before. This is where this is a safe place.
Say
whatever you want here in Madame Perry's salon.
Okay.
Yeah, and even if giving a little leeway here, it was supposed to have been a private conversation, which it can't be a private conversation if you know you've already been on the air. Even so, in private, I mean, even in private, there are some things that you just don't think. My closest girlfriends and I, we might just between ourselves say all kind of crazy stuff, but even we, you know, you have a limit.
I would say that
things
I have
that we find
never
appropriate.
Used. I would say that I have never used the word, before this happened, the word pussy. It has never come out of my mouth, not to my friends, not to anyone. This has never come out of my mouth. And that's why on the cover of the book, there's a famous picture where he's in white tennis shorts and he has his big rear end sticking out and he's grabbing a tennis racket. And on the cover, I just have him grabbing a cartoon cat. And I can't draw, but I designed the cover and I said, have him grabbing a pussy. That's a funny cat, a screaming pink cat. I thought that was funny.
That was brilliant. So, and I didn't know that you created that. That's brilliant to do that.
I did not.
And, you know,
I didn't draw it. It was done by Maria Chavez, but I suggested what the image should look like.
Well, and Maria Chavez obviously interpreted your suggestion
I think
to
she
the
did
letter
a great
perfectly.
Job.
Oh
did
yeah.
A great job.
In fact,
since I didn't draw it, I could say I think the cover is great.
This is great. Yeah, even with the what the hats, the knitted hats, the pussy hats, it's like, okay, can we just call this one? You know, I don't want to make this part of a new normal. Anybody to go ahead and just use the word over and over.
Well, I guess it is the new normal, and now I could say it on the radio. I could say it in my class because now it's a normal word to use. But it's a word of revolution. I guess words like the word queer, gay people took it and empowered it, or chick, women empowered that, or there's the worst thing that you could call a Jewish person is a heeb, but there's a cool magazine that young Jews are publishing, and it's called Heeb Magazine. So you take the word and use it to describe yourself, and then the word loses its negative power, and I think that pussy has become empowering with the pussy hat. The pussy hat is empowering. It's like, you're going to call us pussies? Okay, we're going to wear it on our heads, but we're going to make it in our own way now.
Oh, okay. Now, here's what I'm saying. And by the way, let me stop here and say that if you are listening to us live, and I see a lot of people on Facebook saying that they are listening, if you're listening live and you want to call in and join a conversation anywhere or talk with Marlene Barr, please do. 646-716-9922. 646-716-9922. Blog Talk Radio assures me that this is a toll-free call in the continental U.S. So please join us. You know, when you say that, it makes me think about and by the way, yeah, and I've seen Heap magazine years ago, and the subtitle is The New Jew Review. And
it's the coolest
Jewish people
thing.
Want to say that is perfectly their right. Pardon?
Right, and this is done by young people, and they took the word and used it to their own good, and they put it on their magazine.
Yeah, exactly. It's just sort of like when people talk about, you know, my best girlfriend, who anybody who's been following the show or follow me or knows me, knows the two of us. We're like Gail and Oprah. My best friend is African American, and you know, when people talk about certain words that African Americans may use to describe, you know, among themselves, that other people use as a slur. Now I know she has stopped, you know, kids from saying that out in public, African American kids. But when somebody wants to ask me, well, if they can say it, why can't white people? Well, it's sort of like, I'm a Southerner. I'll make fun of us all the day long and how slow I talk and everything, but I don't want anybody else to. You know,
no, that's the word that cannot be. That word does not fit the category that I'm talking about. That's a word that cannot be said.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, you're right. You're right. And
right.
Even amongst. But when you talk about, though, about using, I thought about a review I saw once on one of Madonna's videos, where she's playing like a bird that's inside this little cages, and said, oh, well, she's taking the image and throwing it back at people, you know, is some people are doing by having pussy hats and this and that and the other, just sort of taking like, you want to say this, you want to use this word, fine, we'll make it prevalent. We'll put it out there for everyone.
But, well, there's still things that can't be done, though, because in my stories, I did everything that I could to him. Like, I sent him to the Phantom Zone, and I locked him in there. I sent him to my other planets. I sent him up the beanstalk. I turned him into Godzilla. Anything that was ever done in genre fiction, I tried to do to him, but I made sure that he was always intact. Like, I didn't explode him, because you can't do that. He's still a president. Like, I didn't hurt him in my stories.
Well, you know what? Let's go on about that, Des. Let's talk about, you're talking about what you said to him. Talk about the premise of the book, When Trump Changed, the Feminist Science Fiction Justice League quashes the out the Orange Outrage Pussy Grabber. Talk about what happens in the book, what's the premise, and how you do those things.
Well, it's a book of self-contained short stories, because I just started writing individual stories, and I kept writing them and writing them, and I got them together, and I said, well, this is enough stories for a book. And what I did was I took every outlandish scenario that I could and did it to Trump. Like, there's a story called Trump Dreams of Jeannie, and I put him in a lamp, and I make him come out. Or I have a story, Trump comes out to Comey, and I turned it into the famous Carol Burnett scenario of Gone with the Wind, where Carol Burnett imitates Scarlett O'Hara, and she puts the green curtains on with the golden curtain rod. And I had Comey in the green room of the White House, and he's scared of Trump, and he takes the curtains and he makes a disguise for himself. And I feminized Comey, because there was an article in the New York Times where Trump did treat him like a woman, and it was a power dynamic scenario. Or I have a story, Zaza Trump Makes America Great Again, because of his Eastern European wives. But in my story, Zaza Trump is black and she's an alien. And I love the name Zaza Trump. And I have another story, Springtime for Trump, because as a Jewish New Yorker, I feel that I'm writing in the tradition of Mel Brooks, where Mel Brooks did The Producers because he liberated a concentration camp, and he thought that the worst thing that he could do to Hitler is to make people laugh at him. Well, I'm not as talented as Mel Brooks by any means, and Trump is not Hitler, but I was very consciously using parody as a weapon to wield against Trump in the manner of Mel Brooks, because I'm trying to make people laugh at him. And if you laugh at a leader, that really brings the leader down. And I have a story called The Worst President Ever, where worst is spelled W-U-R-S-T. And I guess that comes from my 2 years as a Fulbrighter in Germany. It came out W-U-R-S-T, or Trump's Poseidon Adventure, where I recast Ivanka as a mermaid, and she tries to convince her father, Poseidon, that because of climate change, Mar-a-Lago is going to sink and Trump should do something, but that doesn't happen. Or I have a story, Survivor Puerto Rico, and I imagine that Trump is invisible, and he's scrounging for food in Puerto Rico, and no one could see him, and he's just suffering, and there's no help for him. And because of his experience, he comes back to New York, and he lives in Spanish Harlem among Hispanic people, because he feels at home there now.
I think Mel Brooks would be very, very happy to have a copy of this book. I'm just delighted. You know, I've had there was a comment up here from a friend of ours, Becky Kyle, saying, you know, she's a riot, and your imagination just knows no bounds. Just to stop for just a moment, and remember, if you want to call in, number 646-716-9922, I believe Marlene Barr would love to talk with you. Where does and I read somewhere that you had a professor of yours made a suggestion about using science fiction as a way of expressing feminist philosophies and ideas.
Well, feminist science fiction is a subgenre of science fiction, and when I was a young scholar, I was the first scholar. One of the first scholars to really do feminist science fiction as a field, and I got a lot of backlash way back then. I don't want to say how way back then, but it was way back then, because people thought that it was crap. People thought that science fiction was crap. People thought that feminist science fiction was worse than crap. And when I was a graduate student, Ursula Le Guin was not famous then, and I read her, and I went to my hotsy-totsy famous male professors, and I said, this woman is great, and I knew it. And I am responsible for the first article that was ever published on Octavia Butler. And my colleague, Ruth Salvaggio, wrote the article, and I said, I need someone to write on feminist science fiction. And she said, I'm a Dryden scholar. I don't know about feminist science fiction. I said, well, you're my friend. Write it anyway. And she said, all right. And I said, here, write about Octavia Butler. And no one knew from Octavia Butler. And Ruth wrote it, and Octavia Butler is now venerated. And in approximately, in the early 2000s, I did the first anthology on black women in science fiction, Afrofuture Females. And I had a story from Nnedi Okorafor, and she wasn't famous then either. And now she's the coolest, hottest science fiction writer there is. So I think I have very good taste, and I was prescient, and I was able to see the worth of these things before my time.
Excellent. Yes, yes, definitely. Oh, so you've instigated as well as watched the genre grow. I mean,
yes. I have two hats. I started writing fiction because people told me that I was hysterically funny, and scholars are not hysterically funny. Scholars are very dry people, and they write for each other, and nobody reads it. And I somehow wrote humorous academic scholarship, and I did the first science fiction issue of PMLA, which is Publication of the Modern Language Association, which is the most prestigious literary journal in America, and I put on the cover of that in 2014 an extraterrestrial with a zap gun, which is, I cannot tell you how unheard of. I have no words to describe, even though I wrote a whole Trump anthology of parody. I have no words to describe what it was like to put a zap gun on the cover of PMLA. And I went to a conference at a school in Manhattan, and there were two graduate students, and they said, that's her. That's the woman who put the zap gun on the cover of PMLA. And they followed me into the bathroom.
Oh, I love it. I love it, Molly. you know, yeah, and so, oh, my God, that had to be such a feeling, such an energetic, exciting feeling.
It was, because who puts a zap gun on the most prestigious literary scholarly journal in the country? Marlene. Not everybody liked that I did that. Some science fiction scholars didn't like it, but I kind of said to them, if you don't like it, go edit your own science fiction of PMLA and see how hard it is to get that through. And no one has edited one since.
Well, yeah, because you have edited or co-edited PMLA. And as well as many other anthologies. So, hey, if they don't like it, they can do it, you know.
Well, I did anthologies because writing, like I wrote my own scholarly books too. Feminist Fabulation, I guess, is my best-known scholarly book. But writing books is lonely, and I kind of knew all, I know all the science fiction scholars in the world, and I was the only, I was like the first woman in the English profession to be a feminist science fiction scholar. And I got married at 46 years old, and I'm coming out with an article in the September issue of the magazine of the American Association of University Professors called Academe, and it's called Sex and the Single Feminist Science Fiction Scholar. And what I do is I write about the truth of my life being a single woman from, I entered the profession at age 26 when I got my first job, to age 46 when I got married, and that was 20 years when I was running around with all these male science fiction scholars, and I was never, ever harassed, ever. Never. And I did not have that experience. I was, I don't know if I was lucky or all I cared about was publishing and nobody would do that to me. I don't know what it was, but I had a wonderful experience with the male science fiction scholars, and these people are my best friends to this day. And I wrote about
never
that.
Never saw this.
But I had to, but I fraternized with them because from the age of 26 to 46, I had to have sex with someone. I mean, so I did. I have to tell you something that's hysterical. And the I went to the Modern Language Association conference with my husband, and one of my old science fiction boyfriends, who I became friends with, he came to me and he said that there was no hotel room available for him in the hotel, and he couldn't like sleep in the street, and he asked if he could come sleep in my room with me and my husband. So I couldn't say no to him, and I kind of had to get a rollaway bed, and I didn't get one for a long time, and there was like no rollaway bed. So we were in the room, me and my husband, and my old science fiction boyfriend, and my husband said that I had to sleep on the floor because it was my fault that I didn't get the rollaway bed. So the old boyfriend was in bed with my husband, and I was on the floor sleeping.
That kind of makes me, so he would rather sleep with him.
Yes, because someone had to sleep on the floor, and he wasn't going to sleep on the floor. And the old boyfriend was the guest. It wasn't his fault. He couldn't sleep on the floor. So since I didn't get the rollaway bed, my husband is very fair, and he said that I had to be the one to sleep on the floor. So I wrote about this in one of my novels, and I'm not trained as a fiction writer, but my life is like this, and if I just write the truth, I don't have to make up anything. my first novel was called Oi Pioneer, and it was about my Jewish mother telling me to get married every second. And there was an editor who rejected it, and she was getting off the phone with me, and she said, "Marlene, before I get off the phone and I'll never talk to you again, I have to ask you one question." And I said, "What is that question?" And she said, "The mother in the book, is she real?" And I lied and I said, "No." And she said, "Oh, thank God, I could go on with my life." I just wrote everything that my mother did. When computers first came out, I was doing my dissertation in the apartment, in her apartment, and she came and she sprayed my head with Lysol because she said she didn't want to get computer viruses. This happened. So it takes no effort. It takes no effort for me to be funny. It just comes out. And I don't know what I was doing being a scholar all of my life, but thus it is.
Okay. You know, I'm planning to come to New York soon. I certainly hope I can see you in real life up there.
Oh, I would love to meet you. I would love to meet you.
I'll meet you. I want to go. Actually, I want to go see Renee Taylor in My Life on a Diet. So
I love Renee Taylor. Oh, I love The Nanny. That was my life. That's what I come from. I'm from Queens.
Have you seen that play? That's her one woman show she's got going on right now.
No,
okay.
I haven't seen it. But that's the culture that's my exact culture. It's hysterically funny, and Jewish fiction, when something bad happens to Jews in Jewish literature, they make it into humor. And that's what I did with Trump. Because I'm really, really angry. And again, it takes a lot of anger in a year to write 33 separate stories. That's harder than writing a novel, which is, of course, the same thing.
Well, yeah, you've been on here previously as part of anthology, also put out by B Cubed,
alternative facts. Well, what happened was Bob Brown, the wonderful publisher of B Cubed, who started all of this, he put me in Alternative Facts, and I had a whole book, and I just took a deep breath and I said, "Bob, will you publish my whole anthology?" And he said yes. I just asked him, all he could say is, no, that's how I met him, through Alternative Truth. I was one of the authors in there.
Wow. Okay. All right.
That's how I was acquainted with him, through Alternative Truth. He just picked me out of the slush pile and put me in there, and he said that my writing is excellent. And I said, well, if you think my writing is so excellent, I have a whole book where that comes from. And he said, okay.
And Bob was ready for it.
So hence when Trump
and
Change was born.
So, okay. I just even love just the feminine science fiction Justice League. Just that alone, I love. But everything else. I was just looking at your feature or your page on Heavy Feather Review from just last month, just a couple of weeks ago.
I published a new story on there that's not in When Trump Changed.
Oh, okay.
Because
I'm still writing them.
Just because the book is published, I'm still mad and I'm still sitting and writing these stories. Maybe I'll have more When Trump Changed.
This one is called A Feminist Extraterrestrial Special Forces Commander Causes Trump to Become Gone with the Wind. Ah, if only.
It's a power fantasy. Power fantasy. I want him to be gone with the wind so I could write about it and wish.
Thoughts are things and can make it happen. So I will also be sharing the link to this page for everyone to see, as well as all the other links I can share, and also for Amazon, because you should, if you haven't already, get over there to get your copy of this and other books. You won the Science Fiction Research Association Pilgrim Award for Lifetime Achievement in Science Fiction Criticism.
That's the greatest thing that ever happened to me in my life, because Ursula Le Guin won that award, and Joanna Russ won that award, and Samuel Delaney won that award. And if I can do something that Ursula Le Guin did, I loved Ursula Le Guin, and I wrote an obituary for her in Nature magazine. And again, I loved her since I was a graduate student. And she was when I was a young scholar, I published an anthology of my collected essays, and Ursula Le Guin was the outside reader for that, and she said it should be published, and she gave a hand to this young scholar, me, and she didn't have to be the outside reader, and she didn't have to do that. And I think, like with the Academy Award, not everybody can be Laurence Olivier, and like there are better Academy Award winners and lesser ones, like again, not everybody is Laurence Olivier, and not everybody could be Ursula Le Guin, and I am on a much lesser level than that, but that my name could be on the list with hers, that like no matter what happens to me in my life, I know that I did that. And then I was on the committee. I was on the committee to pick other pilgrims, and I picked three pilgrims, and I was able to call them up and say, you get the Pilgrim Award. And in the world of science fiction, academic criticism, we all live for this. It's the biggest thing going. We all live for this, and that I can make other pilgrims. That made me so happy.
Yes. I mean, how? That's the kind of thing that dreams are made of. Of course, you worked for it. It's your talent and your work, you know, just the rigor that got you there. And yet still, just that's got to feel like, I can see what you said, that's one of the greatest feelings.
Well,
how exciting.
It took courage to be a feminist science fiction scholar when everybody thought that it was garbage. Again, I got my first job when I was 26, and I went to a conservative state university, which I won't name, but I call it Black Hole State University, in my novel. And in When Trump Changed, I have a Black Hole State University story where about the Lady of the Lake, and Steve Bannon went to the school that I'm talking about, and there's something at this campus called the Duck Pond, and Steve Bannon is sitting there, and this black hand comes out of the lake, and it's an Arthurian female character, and that's the inception of how he came to be. That's in When Trump Changed.
Well, I'm telling you what, this is going to be, I think this is, you can tell this is a book that's for anyone who's already read it. If you're that lucky, go ahead and tell us what you think, give us a call or make a comment. If not, or whatever, just make sure that when you get this book that you give yourself plenty of time, get all your favorite snacks and beverages ready, because you're not going to want to stop and get up for anything.
Well, I have to say, it is uproarious. Like, you will, I think you'll need face cream, because you're going to have laugh lines in your face, because proofreading is horrible no matter what, and proofreading is a horrible, horrible job, and I proofread it. And I've read it like 20 times, and every time I read it, I still laugh.
Okay, there's a testimony right there. I know you said that you would read to us, and I'd like to do that. Before you read, I'd like just to name some of your titles for people who may be new to you. You're the author of Alien to Femininity, Speculative Fiction and Feminist Theory, Lost in Space, Probing Feminist Science Fiction and Beyond, Feminist Fabulation, Switch of Space, Postmodern Fiction, and Genre Fission, A New Discourse Practice for Cultural Studies, novels Oi Pioneer and Oi Feminist Planets, A Fake Memoir, and, of course, When Trump Changed, Feminist Science Fiction, Justice League, Quashes the Orange Outrage, Pussy Grabber, which is the first single authored Trump short story collection. So, are you ready to read to us?
I'm ready to read to you. And I'm going to read a very short story, and it shows how these stories come from my own experience. And it's called Two Trump Heads Are Better Than One. And I'm not going to explain it because it has to speak for itself. So here it comes. Professor Sandra Lear could not ignore the persistent pain in her molar. And thus it came to pass that she found herself sitting in an oral surgeon's chair preparing to have her tooth extracted. "Do you want me to put growth material in your gum which will facilitate implant insertion?" asked Dr. Doogie Horowitz. Sandra, who was scared as hell that she was about to be decapitated, nodded her head affirmatively. When she returned for her post-operative checkup, she asked for details about what had been inserted in her mouth. "Bone," Horowitz said. "What kind of bone?" "Bone from a cadaver." "What if the cadaver wasn't Jewish? I might have potentially goyish bone cells reproducing in my jaw." Sandra went home and fell asleep. Upon awakening, she felt a weird sensation on her shoulder. She looked into a mirror and saw a second head attached to her body. The head was not a normal head. It had a small, pursed mouth, steely eyes framed by white makeup, and a very strange orange comb-over. She gasped in horror as she recognized the features. Although she had become inured to the ubiquitous presence of the head on television, having Trump's head attached to her body right next to her own head was the limit. Sandra immediately phoned the dental surgeon. "I have an emergency. The cells in my teeth grew into Trump's head, not a new jawbone." "Whoops," said Horowitz. "The cells I used came from Trump's deceased parents, who were buried locally in New Hyde Park. Instead of simply generating new jawbone cells, these cells grew into a completely formed Trump head. Will I gain weight? Trump is not thin, and he eats, I can barely say it, fried taco shells. And if he has access to my hands, does that mean that he can grab my pussy? The Trump head has no control over your body. How do I get my normal Trump headless body back? I need some time to research this question. It is an unprecedented situation. Sandra decided to deal with the issue head on by seeking an audience with Trump himself in Trump Tower. She put on a burqa to describe the Trump head. Politically correct New Yorkers, loath to stare at a burqa-clad woman, would not notice the covered shoulder protrusion. Sandra entered Trump Tower and asked to speak to Trump. Fearing that a woman wearing a burqa had to be a terrorist, Secret Service agents swarmed around Sandra and frantically frisked her in search of a gun or a bomb. Instead, they closely encountered Trump's head. It caused confusion. I'm not a terrorist, Sandra insisted. I obviously have a huge problem. Huge, they all agreed while looking at the head. Trump has a swelled head. Maybe he has a suggestion. The agents escorted Sandra to Trump's apartment. He became enraged when he saw his head attached to her shoulder. Get me a guillotine, screamed Trump. Two Trump heads are absolutely not better than one, sir. Presidents are not allowed to be head people, said a Secret Service agent. Trump began to tweet, Dr. Sandra Lea doesn't know how to use my head, not. Then he continued to shout, I'll use the nuclear codes to explode the hell out of the imposter Trump head. Sir, implored the agent, it is not advisable to deploy nuclear weapons simply because the second Trump head hurts your ego. Can't we blame the Mexicans? I will initiate a travel ban to prevent any other Trump head from entering the country. In response, Trump's alternative head harmlessly exploded. Dr. Horowitz closed the hole in Sandra's shoulder. She recovered completely. The end. So this actually happened. I had a tooth extraction. I was sitting there, and the doctor put bone into my gum in case I wanted to have an implant. And I said, where does the bone come from? And he didn't want to tell me that it came from deceased people. So he said it comes from cadavers. And he didn't know that I was an English professor and I know what a cadaver is. And then I started using my imagination, and I know, since I'm local to Trump, I know things like Trump's parents are buried in New Hyde Park, Long Island, which is where my best friend lives. And I said to myself, oh, my God, what if the bone from the cadavers came from Trump's parents? And I got really scared, and I made up the story that it really did, and that I had a Trump head on my shoulder. And that's, it just came from my imagination.
And this is you. This is not like, not that it's any of my business, or that there was anything wrong with it. This is not like from like a lot of hallucinogenics or alcohol or anything.
In my whole entire life, I have had maybe one glass of white wine in my life, because I love food and I am not a thin person. And if I ever drank, I would look like I don't know what. So I never drank. I never drank. I never took anything. No, to answer your question, this is me. There is no illusion.
And I'll say this to you because, I mean, listen, I haven't smoked weed since 1974. I was just a baby. And as far as alcohol, let's see, my Belgian friend Connie, who I don't know if she's listening, but she invited me on a week girls' weekend to Daytona Beach, and when I didn't engage in the hourly, you know, cocktail of the hour, at all, she goes, "What's the matter with you? I thought you were about to drinker than that." So after that, she went on to everybody about what a horrible friend I was, kind of tongue in cheek, because I didn't drink. So, but she didn't drink.
Well, right. So this just comes to my mind. because the cadaver would be local. Trump's parents are local. And I just had this scenario. What if I had Trump's parents' cells in my head and there was a Trump head? And then what are the implications of that? And how do I get rid of the head? I go to Trump Tower and I ask Trump. And what would he say? And I just come up with these things. And it's not, I don't know where this comes from, but it's not hard for me. I just write it and proofread it.
Oh my gosh. And this is so much fun.
And Molly, I don't know how this comes out of the brain of someone who's an academic. I don't know where this comes from. But again,
I would just call you gifted. That's all.
Well, thank you.
Gifted.
I think it is that I read feminist science fiction for my whole life.
Ah.
And I guess I spent my whole life in science fiction, and I guess it just comes out, and I guess I naturally speak New York Jewish humor, and I put it all together, and out comes a story like that.
So when did you, do you remember when you first became interested in science fiction?
When I was a little kid, I watched Mighty Mouse on television on Saturday mornings, and I loved it. I loved the idea of the superhero, and I didn't have any talent. Like, I couldn't sing, and I couldn't act, and I couldn't play the piano, and all I could do was read. And when we went to visit my grandmother, my mother took a long time, and my father waited in the car with me, and every Saturday morning he brought me a Superman comic book to give me something to do, and I love Superman comic books, and that's where it started, and I started reading science fiction. And I think girls didn't do that then, but I did. I just love planets, and I love the idea of flying around having superpowers. And I know in my stories what I'm doing narratively is I'm taking control of Trump, because this is one person and nobody has any control over him, and I'm having a power fantasy where I can write the narrative and I could control him and I could put him where I want on whatever planet or whatever phantom zone or on the top of any beanstalk.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, somebody else was listening, talking about science fiction, and remember, if you want to talk to Marlene, or maybe some people are just having so much fun listening to you, they say, I'm just enjoying it. She's right. I'm not calling. I'm just love listening. But if you do want to call, the number 646-716-9922. I do have somebody.
You know, we're in a cyber world. This is now a cyber world.
Hello?
Okay, well, all right. Well, that was a short call, but...
It wasn't insulting. If it's a cyber world, at least it wasn't insulting or... Okay.
Did you... you know, I can't help but... And I can't see how the Cheeto Benito, the PGIC, I can't see how followers can still hold their head up and follow him when not just the economic repercussions, like hurting his followers the most with his policies and so forth, but just and rash decisions. But also, when you think about, you know, those clips that you've seen of Buzz Aldrin, you know, on the news with him.
I met Buzz Aldrin once. I met Buzz Aldrin. And in one of my anthologies, there's a picture of me and Buzz Aldrin, and he's holding a model of a rocket ship.
Oh, okay. That's so cool. Marlene, your coolness has no end. You're aware of that. When they were on the news thing and he's talking about the space or whatever, and Buzz Aldrin's looking over, where the heck he's coming up with this, you know, with his eyes. And then even... was it recently? I saw something where he's talking. There's a group of people and talking about the stealth fighters from Lockheed, because they're invisible. They're really invisible. People can't see them.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, or you know, going to Japan and saying, "Hey, Did you ever think about making cars in the U.S.? You know, I'm thinking, can people listen to this and not be embarrassed that they voted for him?
I don't know. I don't know. I have this idea, and if I'm right, in 2020, remember it. But I think that Obama is brilliant, and I think that he's not going to stand for having all of his efforts eradicated. And I think that the Republican Party is going to nominate Biden, and Biden is going to make Obama vice president. I think this.
Sounds good.
Because Obama is not saying anything, and I think he's just biding his time, and I think there's going to be a comeback. Now, again, I don't have a crystal ball, even though I am a science fiction scholar. It doesn't work in real life, but maybe I'm just wishfully thinking, but this is possible. I mean, this is not a story in when Trump changed.
I don't know. You've been pretty ahead of the game on a lot of things, you know. So you definitely have. Yeah, I mean, you've been prescient.
It just
on
makes
more
sense
than one situation.
I read that the leading, that the number one person that the Democrats want is Biden. And it just makes sense. Biden would have Obama as vice president, and they would run on that. That's a winning ticket. So Biden and Obama, if you're out there, if you think this is a good idea, you've heard it here. I think it's great. Like, that's my wish, and that's reality. That's not science fiction, and that's something that can happen. Because I know when I see pictures of Obama, I just want to jump in the television set and go back. Like, I had enough of this. I want to wake up. I want to go back to have a normal president in a normal country, not to be an embarrassment.
Yes. Yes. Wow. But you know, I said, I'm so happy to have you here and so glad, so excited about your new book, When Trump Changed, the Feminist Science Fiction Justice League Quashed the Orange Outrage Pussy Grabber. I wish you the most success with this book. And for anyone listening, if you don't know how to find it, it's on Amazon. It's from B-Cubed. I will be sharing the links to get your copy, to purchase your copy, all over my social media. I've got it on, what do you call this one, Instagram already, and I'm sharing it everywhere else on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, everywhere I've got, I will be sharing this. I am so grateful to you for being with me once again, and hope to meet you soon, as I say, IRL, and thank you for being here. Do you have a parting word or words of hope for your listeners?
Well, I just want to say a word to you. Thank you very much for having me, and I thought that talking to you was an extreme pleasure, and I very much appreciate the opportunity, and thank you for your attention to me and my work.
I am honored to have you here. I am absolutely honored, and I am going to play a song to go out with by some people. I don't know if you've heard me play this before, about the boy from Mar-a-Lago.
No.
And so I'm going to say goodbye from me and Marlene Barr, and I'm going to leave this song on, so if you want to stay and listen to it, anyone, till the end, here is Boy Mar-a-Lago. I love you.
Tall and orange and rich and tubby, the boy from Mar-a-Lago goes walking, and when he passes, each one he passes each vacation, he laughs as he rips off the nation, and when he passes, each one he passes goes.
You cut meals on wheels?
Healthcare?
NES?
Pussy grab
tiny hands.
Oh, and I watch him so madly. How can I tell him I loathe him? NYC. comes not to him but me. How much money is he making from prayer?